Welcome to episode 319 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined by fellow co-hosts.
I'm Steve Stebbing.
And I'm Bill Harris.
I always do this hand thing, like people can see me when they can't. It's just like, it's just a habit. I talk with my hands.
We see you, Marina. It's fine.
Yeah.
I feel seen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
We're Melissa-less today.
Feels like that Melissa-less. Should
be once again, a G.I. Joe villain. Melissa-less.
That's right. That's right. She feels like she didn't do the homework, but I think that's unfair. There was really no homework. It just is what it is.
I've shown up to the podcast without being able to do the homework before. The Love Lies Bleeding episode. It was like,
oh yeah,
torture. Like I was so like scared and worried and like flop sweat. Like this movie is a big deal.
And then you watch it, and there was pretty much no way we could spoil that ending.
No, oh, yeah, there's deeply no way this movie is ever going to get spoiled. Yes, yeah. Yes, you guys did an incredible job. Though I think Rose Glass made it easy for you guys to give not spoilers.
Well, I think, I don't know if the same can be said for Furiosa Mad Max Saga. I think we all know how this one ends.
Hey, but before we even say that, can I just say one? Can I just say one thing? Sean Baker, Palm d'Or winner.
Yeah,
dude, I cried. I legit cried. I saw the Instagram post and I fucking cried because I'm like, I knew that guy when he did his first movie.
Like, how many times have I talked to that dude at the Rio during the film festival, or like just during regular screenings?
I know. Yeah, I had.
He's an Academy Award winner. I mean, a Palm d'Or winner. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
And he's such a good dude too. He's like down to earth and just like likes to talk films and super great.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, he's been on this trajectory of filmmaking for a while. I mean, I think this is what, his third movie that like has sex workers at the center of it. Maybe the fourth. I'm not actually sure. I mean, all of his movies deal with marginalized communities. He's just such a, I don't know, he's just such a nice guy. I was so thrilled.
And didn't it feel like after Red Rocket, I'm like, man, Red Rocket like was everything that year. And then you're like, okay, well, I guess next one, man, next one.
Yeah, and but it's always the next one for him. They're all good. I would say that if you haven't seen like even his early films, like Takeout and what was the one with I'm terrible with titles. Takeout is the one I remember. Oh, Prince of Broadway, which I also really liked. Those are the two early ones that are harder to find, but I would even recommend those two. They're both quite good. But
here's my trivia question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Put on your thinking caps. Neon, the distributor, has now won 5 Palme d'Ors in a row.
5?
Can you name all the films?
Fuck you.
Yeah, Parasite is one of them.
It is.
Yeah. As a team, we should be able to do this, right, Steve?
Yeah, you would think, right? Names.
5 in a row.
Well, what one last year?
Okay, I'll put you guys out of your misery.
Okay.
Last year was Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, yeah.
The year before was Triangle of Sadness.
Oh, yeah.
The year before was Titane. And the year before that, there was no Cannes Film Festival. So the year before that was Parasite.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
That's a pretty good track record.
Well done. And speaking of Neon, they also have Long Legs coming out very soon. Have you heard the advanced shit on Long Legs?
Oh, yes.
I've been trying to steer clear of any material on Long Legs. I saw the trailers. Perkins. Like, I'm done. I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
This might be the crowning achievement of Oz Perkins. And those are big words.
I agree with you. I think he's severely underrated as a filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah, I love his shit.
Me too.
Shout is releasing the 4K of Gretel and Hansel. Or they already did
last week. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I want it so bad because that movie is severely maligned.
I saw it not that long ago and I thought it was pretty good, but then I like his filmmaking. I think he's really underrated.
After Black Coat, he should have been huge.
I agree. Not enough people saw that movie, and I don't
know. No, it was such a limited, like, didn't even only just play the Van City in limited release or something like that. Probably. It was just like really tiny release. I'm like, what the fuck? That is That's like The Witch or you know what I mean? That's the movie that is like, whoa, wow, okay.
Yeah. I agree.
So surprised by that.
Sorry for my con sidetracking. This never happens when Melissa's not here.
Well, the main film we're talking about premiered at cons. So
yeah, exactly. Right? So hey, it's a good tie-in. It's a good segue. Yeah,
exactly.
Good
segue. Exactly.
To George Miller and his 8-minute standing ovation. I said, Dan's like, all these movies getting standing ovations. I'm like, it's the French. It's
which
Canada.
Is weird.
The
French which love is, to which do is it. Totally weird because I gave it a 16-minute ovation.
I would have fucking shouted about Valhalla and being a lovely day for about half hour, 45 minutes after that. Me and my buddy probably did shout about it for like half an hour after.
Witness me.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Mediocre. I'm kind of loving these memes. Like, give me all the memes at this point. I'll take them all. Kind of great. I wasn't quite sure if there was any way this could live up to Mad Max, to Fury Road, because that was something. Like that movie was, it just hit at the right moment and it was the movie. And that was almost 10 years ago now. Like it's shocking. Like Dan and I rewatched it on Friday before going to see this. And Dan's like, are you sure this is what we should be doing? Isn't Furiosa a prequel? I'm like, it'll be fine. I had to dig for the disc. Like I didn't even know where it was. I'm like, I'm sure I've got this somewhere. But I found it. We watched it. It was glorious. It was glorious. I don't think Furiosa is quite as glorious, to be totally honest.
Honestly, I didn't expect him to make Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He made his Tarantino film in the Wasteland. And that's what I appreciated it on. It's episodic in the Wasteland.
Yeah.
And George never makes the same film in the Wasteland twice. And he made, in my opinion, this is an episodic look of the building blocks that formed Imperator Furiosa to who she was when we saw her on Fury Road.
You know, and I totally agree. And I think you're right. And that was the intent the entire time, right? I mean, he told us from the beginning, this is exactly what it was going to be. I think, like, for me, it's an equally as good movie as Fury Road. It's not as bombastic as Fury Road. Like, Fury Road was like 2 hours. It's 2 hours that starts and ends in like high octane and never stops. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts and then it goes to like 400 and it stays there for the entire running time. This one is not that movie. And like you say, Steve, he never makes the same movie twice. So I do appreciate that it's different. It wasn't like when I left the theater, it wasn't like, oh my God, it wasn't like the same high as Fury Road, but it's still like a fucking great movie. Like George Miller is 80.
So yeah.
Basically. And
I like this better than Fury Road.
I think story-wise.
I think it's entirely fair.
I think it is too. I think story-wise, it's a much more complete story. And it actually, if you look at Fury Road, it's not a Mad Max movie. It's a Furiosa movie. Like it's Max is just kind of in it.
Yeah.
But it's not about him. It's about her. And this is kind of just like completing her story backwards, which is weird, but it's a good tie-in. I really enjoyed it. I think storytelling-wise, it's a far stronger movie. It's just not as visually like in your face the entire time, which I like. Like I like the in your face, but I still loved it. Don't get me wrong.
The tying of Fury Road to Mad Max 2.
Yeah.
Through the stowaway scene was all for me. I was like, holy shit. Stowaway it just starts gearing up. All of a sudden there's people flying and in all different ways, dropping bombs. Like, this is fucking awesome. This is Wasteland epicness that only George Miller can give us. I mean, I do miss a bit of the John Seal eye, but I feel the cinematography was still on point with this. I mean, every shot's a fucking painting. Both Alleluia and Anya rule as this character. I love how strong the feminine is in this movie, not just them, but the mom as well. That her getting hit in the gas can and it blowing up over and just riding into the desert is just gorgeous. God, everything. I can't wait to see this movie again. This is a multiple theater viewing because it just commands the theater. It is that it's kind of cinema that raises your goosebumps and your hair and just keeps going. So I love it.
I'm actually kind of shocked that I thought the action scenes even ramped up even more, and I didn't think that was humanly possible. They started adding like flying things to it, and which was just nuts.
Yeah. I had a real moment. I'm like, oh my god, they're flying! And Dan's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine.
it's just all of this stuff, and even like, because of course the it gets leaked that there's a Max cameo, but the cameo is so great. The cameo isn't pandering. The cameo is fucking cool.
I know somebody in my audience yelled out, Rokachansky.
Yeah. It's so awesome. And I don't know, this movie just, and even like, okay, yeah, Miller's kind of used more CG in this film than he did in the previous film. And a lot of people are pissed off about it. And I mean, yeah, it's noticeable in a few points, but it doesn't really ruin the movie to me. Even how thick the stubble of Anya Taylor-Joy's not shaved head is a little like between what her hair looks like and what her, you know, bald, quote unquote bald cap looks like is very different, but it's just, this movie is too awesome not to give it up for. This is what movie theaters are made for, is this movie.
I do agree with that.
I also want to give a shout out to Chris Hemsworth for just completely
supporting
going.
Supporting actor yeah. nomination. Like, yeah. Let's get on the campaign now. He's that goddamn good in this movie.
He is.
Just lets it all go.
Yeah.
The monologues and the lines that he has and the character of Dementis down to his core. There's such personality in this characterization. It's insane. And I love the his multiple changes to this movie and how they come about. I think are so beautifully to the metamorphosis of his character, really. I mean, to the red. That whole the sky blood.
Yeah,
it's just so brilliant. And the cockiness of rolling into the Citadel. I'm like, I'll free all of you. And they're like, are you fucking kidding me?
How many lines does Anya Taylor-Joy have in this movie?
They said 25.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's
pretty nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, she does not talk at all until the last 20 minutes of the film. That's wild. Yeah. That's a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a shout out to Tom Burke.
Yeah,
so good in this movie, and just I don't know when the way that they shoot.
I'm like, wait, he's not Australian, is he? I don't think he is.
He's so good at it. He's so good at it. He nails it.
He's not in enough stuff.
A friend pointed out that he looks like a young Stacy Keach in this movie, and I said,
I could go with that.
Ooh. That's a good one. I really dig that. So that's a good poll. Thanks, Zach. I'm taking that one. That's a nice one.
No,
but yeah, this is one of the we shouldn't be saying either one is better. Can we just marvel at the fact that we have both of these and just love them? And
okay, and can we marvel at the fact that we have five Mad Max movies by one director mm-hmm. over 45 years?
Yes,
like it's fucking like mind-blowing when you think about it. And I thought this was a nice touch to, because I guess the Fury Road they shot in Africa, this one they actually shot in Australia, the Australian desert, where they shot Mad Max. That's which I beautiful. Think also yeah which I think also adds to the fact that the coloring is slightly different. I mean, clearly you can go in and fix everything in post, but I thought that was a really nice touch.
And the shot there was a shot where Dementis is getting ready to hijack, or where they're hijacking the tanker to drive back in a gas town, and it looks so much like a shot straight out of Road Warrior that it's like, holy crap, like you could almost mirror them next side by side. That could only come from one man visionary. And I, you know, I've railed on about people being called visionaries when they're not visionaries. George Miller is a visionary, right? Like, this is his world. He sustained it for five movies. It hasn't wavered. He hasn't curtailed to fan bullshit. He's just made his world the way he wants to. He is a true visionary, right?
Yep. I'd go with that. Yeah. I mean, he's the reason that these movies are almost 10 years apart is because he had another story to tell in between. Like, he's not rushing it. Maybe we'll get another one of these movies. Maybe we won't. Who knows at this point?
Hey, and 3,000 years of longing, I really dug it. So.
I liked it too.
I'm not a fan of that one. Okay. I really enjoyed Chris Hemsworth's ride. Three like motorcycles,
so great.
And he's like
his chariot,
his chariot, more or less, just absolutely incredible. I couldn't stop laughing. And then he drives a monster truck. I'm just like, what the fuck?
The vehicles in this movie, even the Valiant that she drives towards the end of the film, yeah. And they're just these staple Australian vehicles and stuff too, just jacked and rusted to the gills, you know, and it's so great. It's exactly what this film series started on. And I mean, they just made it epic.
Yeah, I love it.
It's just as he progressed, he just made it more epic every time. And goddamn, Furiosa is fucking epic in so many spots. And I love the way that he shoots this character and that he has a vision for this character and how she's supposed to be framed. It's perfect. Just perfect stuff.
Do you know what the really scary part is? In 4 weeks, we're probably going to have to do a mid-year list.
Holy fuck. I'm sweating. I'm sweating. I have four at the top spot. Yeah. I'm sweating.
No, I'm fine. Challenger is all the way. Fuck everything else.
Not even gonna lie about it.
Going it down now. Challenger is all the way. I rewatched the first half of it today. Challenger is all the way.
I think Furiosa might be. Might just get the edge.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's been a good year so far.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches at this point.
It has. But been.
I don't know. Supporting actor right now is all Chris Hemsworth in my mind right now. I love him.
I was trying to remember, like, pre Thor, what did Chris Hemsworth do? I don't remember.
He was on the soap The Neighbors, I believe, for a long time. So
was like Marvel like the first big introduction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or Star Trek. He was George.
Oh, Kirk. Yes. I do remember that. But I was like struggling without looking at him. I'm like, did he do anything before?
Not really. Cabin in the Woods, I think, was completed before Thor was completed, but it wasn't released.
Was he in that?
Cabin in the Woods, yeah. Yeah.
He was the jock guy who had the blonde girlfriend.
He drives the motorcycle into the wall.
I've watched that movie from my memory.
Oh, okay. The movie's great.
It was fun the first time I saw it. Just don't care for it now, but I've clearly forgotten. So I'm glad to see that he's moved on from Marvel and that he's trying new things. This is quite the performance. I thought he was fantastic.
George Miller said he would do a Thor movie.
I would watch that Thor movie.
Yeah, hell yeah, I would.
Hands down, no problem. I'm in. It would be pretty epic. Thor in the Wasteland. It would be
so epic.
We've seen that movie, actually. So I think it's fair to say we all enjoyed it and recommend it.
Yeah, and not only recommend it, but demand. You see it in theaters. Demand.
I agree.
Especially because it's so waning in theater sales and ticket sales right now. It's like it did less than 31 million in its first weekend.
They got 56 of my dollars. $56 to see this thing in IMAX. I could have cried when I paid for it.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. But
you
like,
gotta love a movie a lot to go see a movie in IMAX.
No doubt.
How much is it a ticket? $25?
$26 each plus or 25 plus your $2 processing fee.
Ugh.
Plus taxes.
Jesus.
I saw it in IMAX here and I'm a CineClub member.
Oh, that's why it's a little bit cheaper, I think.
So it was $7 after that. And I used scene points. Kabam. Free. Thanks.
Oh, I didn't have enough scene points to pay for two tickets. So I'm saving those for, I guess, something else. I have no idea. But yeah, $56 almost.
Wow.
God damn.
For two tickets. I could have cried. Like, you gotta really love a movie to go see a movie.
Yeah, I'm sure that has nothing to do with the waiting theater people going, because that's probably even more in, say, a place like New York. If you want to go to like an Alamo Draft House, I'm pretty sure it's probably $50 for two people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
It's getting that. It's out of hand. I mean, this, which is why I try to see movies during the week on a matinee, because they're a little bit cheaper and usually they're a bit quieter. Because like we went on Friday at like with the very first IMAX show on Friday, which was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and there were maybe like eight people in the theater.
It also doesn't help that, let's be honest, that's going to be on VOD in 3 weeks.
Probably. So sad. And a lot of people will wait. So
fucking sad.
Yeah.
You need to see it in theaters. I really hope that word of mouth really starts pushing this movie, because I mean, that's the only mode for this movie. I mean, I'm going to be pumped to own it when Warner sends it to me, and I'm going to back to back both movies like fucking crazy forever. But I don't know. I'm bummed that I don't know that the theater perception is so low right now. It's super.
Well, I think I think cost is part of it. Like everything, yeah,
cost definitely is part of it.
Everything is so expensive. I mean, when you're shelling out $26 for a movie ticket, you gotta really want to see that movie to pay that much money for one ticket. Yeah. Like that's nuts. I paid $12 for a bag of popcorn. Where is this normal? I'm like, never. I can't even eat theater popcorn anymore. It's too much.
That's sad.
It is very, very sad. It's very, very sad. But this is the state of movie going at the moment. But I would agree. Like if you don't see anything else this month in theaters, go and see Furiosa on the biggest screen you can find. You will not regret it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm with you on that.
So talk to me about Hitman, because you guys have seen this. Yes. And I want to hear from two trusted voices about the greatness of Glenn Powell and Richard Linklater. Because I understand from Bill that he finally understands.
So
Powell is fucking awesome.
This is the first. So it was like two episodes ago that I finally figured out Zendaya. I figured out Glenn Powell. He is the smart man's Matthew McConaughey.
There was glimmers of it. If did you enjoy Everybody Wants Some?
I did.
You saw the glimmers of it right there. You saw the beginning. You saw the seeds of his star power in that movie. Because when I came out of that movie, I was like, Glenn Powell. I'm really excited about Glenn Powell and Austin Emelio. I'm a big, big guy about Austin Emelio. And thank you that Hitman came around, because both are just beacons of absolute starlight from those movies.
But you must admit there has been nothing like this for him.
No, he is
incredible in this film.
No, he had to write it himself.
Yeah,
he had to write his own, because he knows what he can work with. He knows his sensibilities. He knows what works for him. Also, he's giving himself the most insane actor's challenge in this movie too, by all of these different characters he's playing throughout it. Like, it is such a showcase of, hey, you want to do any kind of movie you ever want to do? Well, Glenn Powell can help you out here. It is like the greatest resume B-roll that he can give himself in his career. And it just happens to be co-written and directed by Richard fucking Linklater.
Yeah. Whose resume is A+.
Oh my God. Even A+. A bad Linklater film is great. I don't know. You know, like you can even watch me and Orson Welles and still enjoy the fuck out of a Richard Linklater movie.
Yeah, I like that movie. But I was going to say Brothers Bloom, but that's just me.
Brothers Bloom is Ryan Johnson.
Oh, it's Ryan Johnson? Okay, then fuck him too.
So it's the worst Richard Linklater movie, because it's a Ryan Johnson movie. Then
fuck him too. But no, I just loved every frame of this film. It's just so infinitely watchable.
It is. I'm going to argue that the last scene sunk my battleship a little bit.
Did you want it to end at a certain spot and it didn't?
Yeah,
I had the same feeling.
I was like, why that scene? It was so Hollywood glossy. I'm not going to give it to you, Marina, but it's just so, it's so unlike the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just like, here's a big old cornball for you anyway. Bye bye. And I was like, it deflated it a little bit for me from being like, oh, it's easily the best film of the year. Like, it's not in that art, that category for me because of that. like really because of that, because everything else feels so perfect to me. And that one was like, it was like, oh, it almost feels like reshoots as well.
Test audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one thing that blows me away is Richard Linklater's ability. Like he's really grounded in telling Texas stories and always has been, right? But he still also feels so at home filming in New Orleans in this. He makes the film feel so familiar. Like you know this place and everything. And it's, I don't know. The location's a character in this film as well, and I really dug that about it. Like this is filmmaking to its simplest core, and I really enjoyed it on that level. And there are definitely not movies like this movie.
It actually doesn't look like a Richard Linklater film.
No,
you know, like usually they're very like lo-fi slacker-ish kind of films. They don't look terribly well shot.
He's polished.
This is really well shot.
Yeah, he's super polished in this film.
Yeah, I was shocked by it. I was like, oh,
yeah,
nice. Better DP this time, sir?
Yeah, I think maybe. But I don't know. I really hope that him and Glenn Powell have really found something here and that they continue to work together in the future, because I think there is a lot from this well that you can pull.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's one of my favorite films of the year. Except for that last shot.
I mean June 7th you can see for yourself, everybody, but because it's on Netflix then. But I give it its love in theaters though.
Yeah, like, I wish it wasn't on Netflix. I wish people had more of an opportunity to see it, but at the same time a billion people are going to be able to see it on Netflix.
And I'm worried again, because I've talked about this on the show before, the stigma of being called a Netflix film always takes the wind out of the sails for a lot of people. And it really bugs me because not all films are like Netflix films. Yeah,
this was acquired by Netflix. It wasn't made
exactly
by Netflix.
So, but there's no generalization. There's always generalization when it comes to the release for your mainstream audience. So I just hope it doesn't get caught in that whirlwind. And it makes me really excited for Twisters next.
Right? I'm still, I saw that trailer again the other day and I'm like, yep, that movie's happening.
I love a cocky Glenn Powell.
I'm in for it. I love him. So I think this is great.
Yeah.
Great news for me.
Yeah.
It's the conversation the two cops have about his one character.
Yes.
So good.
His outfit for his first job.
Yeah.
Okay, so explain to me what the actual basis of the movie is.
Basically, he is a guy working. He's a teacher during the day, and he loves doing that job. But he also volunteers for the FBI and kind of wiretap kind of stuff. And the guy that is supposed to be posing as a hitman, as a killer for hire to entrap these people, has been suspended for 3 months. That's Austin Emilio's character. So being the only guy that could pull it, that they think they could pull it off, they throw him into the mix, and he starts becoming really good at it and becomes like a master of disguise to it and starts tailoring his hitmen to the people that he's trying to get put in jail.
All right. Got it.
Yeah. That's a true story.
Yeah.
It's a true story. Yeah.
Hijinks ensue. Mm-hmm.
Where do you volunteer for the FBI? I don't want that job.
Right?
Oh my God.
Craigslist.
Yeah.
Apparently. Answer that crazy Craigslist ad. It's probably real.
Yeah, exactly. You just thought it was just some guy wearing a tinfoil hat.
Exactly.
It was really the FBI.
This is a deep cut, but you thought it was just a guy wanted to wear a walrus suit.
Oh, Kevin Smith, you bastard.
We had to go there.
Oh, Michael Parks. You got to admit, Michael Parks is amazing in that movie.
He's pretty good.
Whatever you feel about Tusk, Michael Parks gives it his fucking all. In both movies that he did with Kevin Smith, that and Red State, he is on fucking fire. And just, you know, to have the last kind of movies in his career be those roles, like, good on you, sir.
Just wish they were better.
Oh, I like Red State.
I like Red State a fucking hell of a lot.
Yeah.
That movie's great.
I actually
super unpredictable.
I actually don't remember it that much. So
it's so
I don't remember what I thought of it.
It's wild. And if you look at the cast now and then look at where those they are in life, you're like, holy shit, that's a who's who right now. Yeah. Nicholas Braun's in that movie.
Yeah. He was on a pretty big TV show.
Yeah.
A little small part.
And now he's playing Andy Kaufman in the Saturday Night Live movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They hid his role and then someone leaked it in a set photo.
Boo.
Somebody's getting fired.
They said he was playing Jim Henson. And then someone was caught filming on the set. And they, the one that the lead in Gabriel, what's his name from The Fablemans, is Lorne Michaels.
Oh wow!
And Nicholas Braun is Andy Kaufman.
Weirdly, more on Jim Henson later.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I watched it.
Yeah. Well, do you guys want to talk about other stuff you've been watching?
Yeah, okay, we'll just jump right into that one. Jim Henson Idea.
I haven't seen it. I was just going to say that it was opening, but
I've seen it. I have. I got the screener for it. It's Ron Howard. It doesn't play it as safe as the recent, very, very recent Beach Boys movie from Frank Marshall does. There's like, they don't, in the Frank Marshall one, they don't even talk like the darkness of the Beach Boys. They don't even talk about Dennis's death. They don't talk about the strife between Mike Love and Brian Wilson. They don't dig into any of that shit. And I was like, the fuck. I enjoyed the film, but also at the end, when the credits rolled, I was like, the fuck. They avoided a lot of shit.
The only thing I liked about that documentary was the Beatles versus Beach Boys stuff and Pet Which Sounds is, and Sgt. Pepper's and
yeah. Which yeah. is so great to know, like, oh, well, that's the levy of creativity that really broke a landslide of inspiration for everything we have today. So thank you. Thank you to both of those groups.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so shallow.
Yeah, I wasn't.
It was so shallow. Idea Man is a little bit deeper than that, but still not enough, I feel like. Ron Howard is a crowd pleaser director when it comes to these documentaries that he does. But being as big as a Jim Henson guy as I am, I was really, really into this. There's a lot of footage that has never been seen before. A lot of his work that has never been seen before. A lot of the stuff that him and Jane did prior to Jim really taking off with the Muppet Company and everything. I dig it. It's studious, but I maybe missing a little bit of the darkness, but it's good to see a legend like Jim Henson get his due in a biopic like this or a bio documentary like this.
Cool.
So yeah, I dug it. I think it's worth checking out.
Cool. Do you want to go?
Yeah, I can roll on this one.
Sure.
Get my list out here. The 4K of The Crow came out. just gonna quickly on this one. This is the movie that made me the psycho film guy that I am today. And not to say that The Crow is like the greatest or anything like this, but it made me pay attention.
It's a seminal film for a lot of
people. Yeah. It made me pay attention to art direction, soundtrack, special effects. Like I was just a myriad of stuff, and it's just
that soundtrack still kills.
I think it's like one of the greatest soundtracks ever made.
I'm with you.
It's so special, and I mean this is a quintessential 90s revenge film, but it's so inherently goth, and I think that's another reason why it has such a deep part of my heart. That
it spoke to me because that's what like I was the goth. Yeah. In my eyes.
Yeah.
That and there were a couple of movies in the 90s that really spoke to me, and that was The Crow was really one of them.
The Cure's Burn playing while he paints so himself up. Nine Inch Nails cover of Joy Division's Dead Souls as he's running across the rooftop. Like there's just stuff that will just be burned into my movie mind forever. And that's why when you look at my letterbox, The Crow is in there. It's one of the greatest.
So the transfer is good on the disc.
The transfer is good. It works because a lot of these some of these aren't transferring very well, or there's like weirdness to some of the transfers. I mean, nothing about it like pops it like, whoa, this is 4K. But it was like, yeah, this is The Crow.
They didn't screw the color timing up or anything like that.
No, okay. It still has that saturation that really works. That Proyas kind of dinge that he did with this. And I think Dark City has the same kind of look to it as well. This movie is just awesome. I dig it still. So I'm so biased when I come to it. I finally got to see Godzilla Minus One.
Nice.
And this is the most terrifying that Godzilla's ever looked in any of his iterations. He is actually scary. And what is it, the fact that there's actually spittle flying when he roars, and it's just it has weight and volume and visceralness to it. That opening scene on the island, the attacking of that base, is brilliant, and it doesn't let up. And the other thing where this movie excels, it actually gives you character stakes, and that you actually give a shit about. And this movie is a goddamn kaiju masterpiece. Like, the more I think about it, the more it becomes number one with a bullet of like the greatest. I absolutely loved it. I watched an indie film called We Grown Now that takes place in Cabrini Green in the early 90s by Minhal Bag, who wrote and directed this one. I really dug it. My only real connection, anytime I think Cabrini Green, I think Candyman. And this is definitely not Candyman. Like, this is something about two poor kids growing up together and kind of facing the social economics of living in a 1992 Chicago. And it's a solid, solid film, well constructed, and has an end scene in it that reduced me to a bag of tears. I was pretty much done after that.
Wow. Might have to check that one out.
Yeah. Very solid film. I got sent the new reissue of Gravity on Blu-ray, and it has the Silent Space version. So I hadn't seen that version before. I was kind of okay on Gravity. I will say that it is technically an incredible film, and there's nothing like it, but it's also Sandra Bullock hyperventilating for like 2 hours.
It's also the only film that ever gave me a headache while watching 3D.
I bet. I never got the chance to see it in theaters, and I could imagine that be a great theater experience if it wasn't tortured to your eyes. But I don't know, the Clooney coming back scene still pisses me off. It's still such a garbage part of that movie. I don't know, and I still kind of land as like a 3.5. A lot of these ones are like just like old ones that I got sent to me on Blu-ray. Like I had never seen Stand and Deliver before. Edward James Olmos, like urban inner city high school film. That's a solid film. You could tell why Lou Diamond Phillips became a freaking star, because he gets La Bamba after this movie, and he's just so babyface and pretty. Lou Diamond Phillips in 1988, pre Young Guns. And I was pissed that I never got the chance to see this re-release in theaters, but I rewatched Stop Making Sense. God damn, that movie is so good. Probably the greatest concert film ever. I don't know if I'm being controversial in saying that.
Last Waltz.
I like Last Waltz a lot, but I will watch Stop Making Sense over Last Waltz.
Really? I love the band. I love the band.
I love the band as well, but I love Talking Heads so much.
Yeah.
I especially love that rendition of A Psycho Killer.
Yeah.
Just him in a boombox beat. I love it so much. And David Byrne and Jonathan Demme are a hell of a combo when it comes to constructing this show. Like, even the emergence of the band, how the band slowly comes together as the first 7 songs are done. It's just like perfect.
I saw a screening of that last year for TIFF.
Yeah.
In 4K IMAX, and they had a Q&A afterwards, and it was the worst Q&A I've ever seen in my life.
What?
It was just Spike Lee going, "I love this song. What do you think about it?"
Oh, come on.
And they're all like, "Well, I played drums on it." And David Byrne tried to save it, and then Spike be like, "But tell me about the suit." And that was just the it was just a fanboy the whole time. It was bad.
That sucks.
I love you, Spike, but maybe don't do Q&As.
Yeah, no doubt. Ugh, that's terrible. I saw If, the John Krasinski kids movie, and I was very aware 20 minutes into it that this is very much a kids movie. I think that it's a film that is more concerned about being sweet and likable than telling a good story with good characters. It's like a hollow sugar cookie. Mm-hmm. It's just so shallow. And then the ending and the resolution to this movie has such a horrible shrinking world syndrome to it that it just sucks the air out of everything. Everybody's likable, but there's nothing beyond it. Just nothing. It's just a false picture.
Wasn't there a horror film with the same name?
Imaginary. It was called Imaginary. Okay, it was worse. It was far, far, far worse. But If, I don't know. I like, it's likable. It's hard. It's kind of like a cute stuffed animal. You want to be like, you're not very well constructed. I don't really like you, but it's mean for me to say something about something that's trying to put so much positivity in the world. But I don't know. I checked out Ivan Sen's latest film, Limbo. And I kind of dig I like Ivan Sen's like slow burn outback mysteries. This is definitely one of his lesser ones, because I think like Goldstone might be my favorite of his work.
It's solid. It's very solid. That's a good movie.
Yeah. It's so fucking good. And I just recently, because I'd never seen it, so I might bite my words on that, but I just bought Mystery Road.
Oh, it's really good. eBay, yeah, you won't be disappointed. A couple
weeks ago, so
no, it doesn't disappoint. Mystery Road's pretty good too.
I like that lead actor a lot, though. I think he's really great, and I think that's what Limbo's missing. As much as I like Simon Baker and this black and white, no, you know, outback noir style that Ivan Sen's doing, I missed him. It's Aaron Peterson, I think his name was. I like him a lot. But of course, it isn't an Ivan Sen film unless it has like an Aboriginal beat to it. And this one definitely does. I also thought the backdrop of this film is just incredible. It's like Cooper Fetty or something like that. And it's like it's an opal mining town. And most of the town's infrastructure is like built into the rock and underground in it. It's really, really weird. But yeah, I dug it.
I have to look this up. I'm like, I think I've seen this. I have seen this.
Yeah, you saw this one? Hotel room he wakes. Like, I don't think I could stay in a hotel, the underground hotel. It seems really like just really too scary to me. I just think ends and everything. I'm a little scared about that. And I also think about like the local wildlife and stuff. And stuff coming out of cracks and crevices. Because I don't think I'll ever go to Australia, because I'm just scared of that shit. But
they're just no spiders. Diss to anybody. They're just spiders, Steve.
Just the giant, the most. They only have like the most poisonous spiders in the universe. The most poisonous snakes in the world. Like all the things that will kill you are in Australia.
No. Plus, you know, driving randomly, hitting a kangaroo.
You're supposed to hit them. You're supposed to hit them. They want you to hit them. They want you to kill kangaroos while you're out there.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So fucked up. But yeah. After Marina talked about it last episode, I watched Arcadian. I do not like the creature design. What the fuck was that? That was just...
I told you it was bad.
No, and there was stuff I was really liking about it. Yeah, and then of course Nicolas Cage coming all fucked up at the end of the movie. Yeah, I was like, this is, I don't know, I didn't hate it. I just, the creature design really took me out of it. And I thought Jade Martell's always solid, but the other kid, what's his name, Maxwell Jenkins, I thought he was quite solid in the film. I watched Destroy All Neighbors, which I was kind of geeking out about because this is Alex Winter kind of stretching back to Freaked, like doing some of that under makeup character work. But this one has Jonah Ray from Nerdist podcast. And he's basically this prog rock guy that has a horrible neighbor, which is Alex Winter under really brutal makeup, and ends up accidentally killing the guy. And then, I don't know, all the dead bodies that he kills slowly come back to life and start helping him record his prog rock album. It's so fucking weird. It's goofy. It leans into being goofy and stupid. The gore is not it. I mean, there is gore, but it's more for comedy reasons. And I don't know. It's a bit of a stretch here and there, but I like seeing Alex Winter go back to some of the stuff where I love from him, especially like Freaked. So I was okay with that. I watched that Scoop film. I'm okay with a journalist movie. It really is a so-so journalist film. But once it gets to that interview with her, with Emily, I forget what her last name is, and Prince Andrew, played by Rufus Sewell, that's where the bread and butter of this movie is. And that scene really, really, really works really well, especially because I hadn't watched the actual real interview. So seeing it done like that was great. I also really like Billie Piper, but
yeah, I liked her too. I thought that I was with you. I thought the movie was okay, but that scene is really killer.
It's fire stuff. It's like stuff that reminds you like Frost Nixon. And stuff.
Oh,
like
for
that.
Sure.
Like it's tete-a-tete stuff. And I really dug it, especially tete-a-tete with like basically a bumbling fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like he's such an idiot. And the way he entraps himself and implicates other people and just like, well, he just, what the fuck, man? You're a
Rufus
idiot.
Is so good in that role.
He's like, really good. And like, yeah, like you said, it takes a few blinks of like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's him. And Gillian Anderson's a fucking queen.
Always. Always.
Oh, and I really, really love seeing Romola Garai show up in things.
Yeah. I've
always been a Romola Garai fan. I got the 4K of this from Warner Brothers. So I decided I'm going to rewatch American Sniper.
Dude. Why?
That movie sucks.
It does.
Still sucks. It's so misguided. It's so just bleedingly shallow and frustratingly shallow and frustratingly shot and like incoherent in so many scenes. And like, why were we giving this a fresh rating again on Rotten Tomatoes? Like, what the fuck?
How many Oscar nominations did it get?
Right. Why did we let this movie skate by saying it was one of the best movies of that year? It's just, it's the fake baby shit. Chris Kyle is such a blank slate of a human being. And then once you've kind of figured out what the real Chris Kyle was like in real life, it's just even more, it just pisses you off even more. And it's just a celebration of a guy that didn't deserve a blip of it. I don't know if that's a controversial thing to say, but that's what I think.
If they had sent me that disc for free, it would still be sealed on my shelf and I would never open it. Sorry. That movie sucks.
That's fair. That's fair. Last night I watched Ezra, Tony Goldwyn directed. It's got Bobby Cannavale, Rose Byrne. Basically Cannavale is a stand-up comedian that has an autistic son and ends up kind of kidnapping him and driving him across the city across the country when he doesn't really agree with the mom's method in putting him into a different school. And it's a likable enough film. Being a parent myself with a kid on the spectrum, there's a lot that hits home for me and that really not on the caliber of the film, but the caliber of the message really hit me, especially when it's talking about autistic kids and their inability to show affection in the way that we all interpret it. And his as a father struggle with that really hit home for me. So I feel like my review on this would be kind of biased just for that simple fact, but I really dug it. And, definitely got a tear out of me that I don't think it would get out of like a regular audience, if that makes any sense.
That's fair.
And yeah, I think that's it for me. I watched the Biz Markie documentary All Up in the Biz, but.
Oh, baby, you
yeah
got what I need.
This DVD doesn't exist if you look it up anywhere. I cannot find it anywhere, but apparently I got it. So I don't know how the fuck, but I couldn't find any information anywhere about it. But I have a biz all up in the biz DVD. So it exists.
Sure.
And I think that's it.
Bill?
First off, I just wanted to say a disclaimer that I think Steve liked this film. So I'm going to feel really bad just fucking Uh-oh. Destroying it. Uh-oh. But holy shit, did I hate Boy Kills World.
Me too. Oh, no. I wasn't a fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve.
It's my stupid one.
Oh, it's just so generic and boring. And
oh, dude, it's so bad. I know. Sorry, Steve. It's so horrible.
And like Archer is doing his voice, and I'm just like, oh my god.
I don't watch Archer. I watch Bob's Burgers, which is even worse.
Okay.
I'm like, Bob is talking to me, but in this movie, it just makes no sense. It makes no sense. My mind does not compute this.
And I was watching this. I'm like, Steve said this is like his dream journal or something like that. I'm like, Steve has some really shitty dreams.
It was like my high school kid dream journal is what I said.
I will say, like, I could appreciate the technicality that goes into it. Because, I mean, this action sequences are really over the top and really involved. And they look amazing. And there's some really interesting camera work in some of those sequences, particularly the arena scene. Like, it's not really an arena where they're shooting the show or whatever. That second sequence, it, like, there was some weird camera stuff that was going on. I was like, whoa, how did they get that? But, oh, it was just so tedious.
Yeah.
After the first 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm not sure if I can sit through 90 minutes of this.
The only thing I kind of liked about it, there was a really pretty girl with amazing eyes in the film. Holy crap, she was really pretty. And Charlton Copley is as good as he always is.
Always.
The guy always shows up and kills.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But man, not a good film. Yeah, sorry, Steve. Yeah.
No worries.
I saw the TV glow, which I really, really liked. Wasn't the biggest fan of Jane Schoenbrunn's last film, We're All Going to the World's Fair. Thought it was really weird. Just didn't work for me at all. And this one, if you ever watched like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, this movie is gonna like hit hard for you. Also, if you're trans, because that movie is more or less a whole thing about transitioning as a cis male. It didn't work as hard as some of my queer friends who were like crying beside me when they were watching it, which was pretty intense. But I love this film. I think it's one of the best films of the year. Nice. And Justice Smith is slowly becoming a really incredible actor. And he's just top notch in this film. I know you guys haven't seen it. Hopefully you'll get to see it soon.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that it's A24, which means it'll be in VOD in 6 months. Yeah. Cause they never put their stuff on right away.
No.
So, and then the movie's very small and probably not opening near Steve. Nope. And yeah. So hopefully you'll get to see it soon. I saw this documentary called The Movie Man. You guys heard about this?
No.
So this dude in Ontario opens a fiveplex in the middle of the forest in northern Ontario in a town of like 800 people. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Kind of doesn't work, but he finds ways because he's got this like weird mentality that if he builds kind of like this shrine to movies, he has like movie posters and movie trinkets and kind of makes a museum inside of the theater. And started off as a oneplex. Then they got a little busier. He added more and up to a fiveplex now. And the movie is more or less about how the movie, like other than, you know, the fact that there's 800 people in the town, the movie industry is kind of dying and people aren't going anymore. And COVID almost killed their theater. And then they came back and it was kind of repetitive. And I was just interested in this guy running the theater. It was pretty interesting, but it's not the best documentary. If you get a chance to see it, but it's not that great. I like more of the minutia of running a movie theater, not about mm-hmm. the business aspect of it. I could care less about that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw the as Steve and I were talking about earlier, the Beach Boys documentary. I love Pet Sounds. Everybody should own that on vinyl because it's awesome. But yeah, this
how much time did they spend on Pet Sounds in this movie though?
I don't know, like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. About that. And it's like an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah. Even God Only Knows, they spent like 5 minutes talking about God Only Knows.
I know.
They talked
more about Sloop John B than that. But good Vibrations, like, you know.
Yeah.
Who would put a theremin on an album? You know, like Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson. Like, yeah. Clearly we should have known this by then.
Yeah.
If they dipped more into his mental struggles, we would have known like this already by the time we got to Pet Sounds. But now fuck that. It's too dark. It's too dark for our Disney Plus movie.
There should have been a sign at the end that said, also, please watch the Paul Dano film from a couple of years ago. You'll get a better explanation on this subject.
Also the one we tried to hide.
Yeah, totally.
No, nobody saw that year.
But yeah, I'm really happy with, you know, I know it's a movie Marina watched with Dan that I'm really waiting to hear what Marina thought of it, because I heard what Dan thought of it. But this has been a really good like half year, and I'm really happy with. I kind of made a weird like top five list a couple of days ago, and it had 15 films on it. So, I'm quite happy with what's going on right now, mm-hmm. and that's it for me. I didn't really watch too much, but I'm super happy with Furiosa, Hitman. Mm-hmm. I saw a TV Glow. See all those films on the big screen; they're all incredible. Yeah, that's it for me.
You alluded to it, so I might as well start with Sunset. Sasquatch Sunset.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I will get the title of that movie right at some point. Mm-hmm. I mess it up every single time. It's so good. It's like the problem is this is not the kind of movie you can just like randomly recommend people. It's like you tell them what it's about and they're like, what? Like my mom gave me the weirdest look. Like it's a movie about what exactly? Like, but it's not really about the Sasquatch. It's about everything else. She's like, but what else happens? I'm like, nothing happens. They wander around the woods. You know, humanity is encroaching in their space. It's all about how we are like consumers and we don't care about nature and we're encroaching on all of these spaces that should be sacred and killing basically everything that's natural and good in the world, including the Sasquatch, which doesn't actually exist. I don't like it's such a bizarre mesh of ideas, but it really works. And like you said, Bill, I think the first like 5 minutes, you kind of like, because you're watching these people in Sasquatch suits walking around the woods, and it's kind of jarring, and you're like, what the fuck am I even watching? And then, like, I don't know if it's something in your mind or if it's the movie itself, but there's like this shift that happens like 10 minutes in, and you just kind of like go with the vibe, and it turns into this like really beautiful movie about, you know, these essentially they're just, you know, people that live in the woods, creatures that live in the woods that are trying to survive in their own way. And, you know, every once in a while they run into, you know, traces of humanity. And the first time that it happens, you're like, in your mind, you're like, oh, okay. So humans, like they leave somewhere near humans. And then the road scene happens, and that road scene,
There's a scene of loss in this film.
Oh my god!
Really got to me.
It's fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah. Like, heartbreaking. Yeah.
It shouldn't work, but it does. And I would say, like, I would recommend it to everybody, with the caveat that you just have to give it a chance, because I know it sounds weird and it looks weird to begin with, but you kind of get into the mood of things, and it has like this really strong message about like environmental stewardship. Like, honestly, it's such a great movie. I loved it. I thought it was great. Dan's like, it was better than I anticipated. We both really enjoyed it.
Well, we got the Dan seal of approval, so that's a hard
sell, man. I watched Mother's Instinct with Anne Hathaway and Jessica Chastain. I think this is a remake, if I am not mistaken, although I don't take my word for it. I didn't look it up. I know it is based on a book. Two really solid performances from two really great actresses. The movie is just kind of like, I don't know. I didn't really think it worked. Like, the concept is great. So there's these, there are two women. It takes place in like the 50s, I guess. They're neighbors, they're best friends. They both have children. One of the women's sons dies. And then things start to like devolve. It hurts their friendship. One of the mothers becomes like completely paranoid, and Chastain basically becomes the paranoid one and goes totally mental. So, I mean, super solid performances, but there's just something about the pacing of the movie that just doesn't really work. So, I mean, I would say it's worth seeing for the performances, but it doesn't fully click. I mean, it looks great, good performances, but overall it doesn't really work. I made maybe the mistake. I don't know. It was a waste of 2 hours. I watched Atlas, the Jennifer movie on Netflix that like dropped on Friday. I don't know, man. It's an interesting concept. I mean, I feel like it's such a missed opportunity because we're currently in the midst of the AI takeover of the universe. And here you have a movie which is exactly about that. The robots take over. And then we managed to chase them away. But the one central AI that runs everything, you know, we got to hunt it down on some planet or something. I have no idea. Simu Liu is the ultimate AI. It's the worst bit of casting in a while. Jennifer Lopez is great.
Has Netflix ever made anything good science fiction wise?
I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, like nothing comes into my head.
Well, what was the Aya? What was the Aya film that was all in the chamber? Hmm. There was an Aya film that's all in one location. It's in like a pod. The whole movie. Forget that one was called.
Remember that one?
It's like French film.
Is Squid Game sci-fi? I don't know.
I haven't even finished Squid Game. Okay, I'm on like the middle of the season at this point. I'll never finish it. But all to say, like you waste this cast. You have Jennifer Lopez, you have Sterling K. Brown, you have Mark Strong, and you have a movie that is fucking terrible. Like,
the most interesting thing about Atlas as a movie is J.Lo and Ben Affleck getting divorced.
No.
It's the most interesting thing about the movie.
No, it's not.
It is.
It's not.
According to the press, it is.
Oh, the press.
They're like, do you want to talk about the movie? No, I don't want to talk about your shitty movie.
We haven't seen them. We haven't seen them together in public in like 47 days. I don't fucking care. Like,
give a shit.
Talk to me about the movie.
Funniest thing is this is 2 months after the greatest love story ever told.
Yeah, true.
That's the best part.
I don't know.
And
I just,
this is me now, divorced.
I don't think so. I mean, I feel bad because I really like Jennifer.
So either, so.
I really like Jennifer Lopez. I just think that this movie is just badly conceived. There's like, it's an interesting concept that's just badly realized.
She's just having a bad time picking projects.
I could see how on paper this would look really great. I mean, the concept is solid. I mean, she plays a geeky scientist that basically is, she ends up on this planet. She doesn't want to be there and has to, through a series of events, ends up having to connect to this AI to, you know, help take down the bad guy. Like, on paper, it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. And they got a studio director to do it. Because Brad Peyton very much is a studio guy.
Oh, for sure. But that's the thing. Like, it's paint by numbers. Like, there's nothing interesting here beyond her relationship with the AI, which the banter is so good. But it's a wasted movie. Like, it's just a lot of robots doing shit. It's kind of what it comes down to.
Was their idea of making her geeky just by like putting glasses on her and
put some black rimmed Tom Ford glasses on her?
Every now and then she pushes them up.
Oh my God.
You got it.
Or brings them down.
And drinks lots of coffee.
Oh, yes.
This is what makes her a scientist. Like always. Oh, and she walks in with a plan to take down the AI printed on paper.
Nice.
And that is by far the best scene. They're like, well, what is this? Yep. She's like, paper. Because, you know, we can't trust the AIs. I'm like, where did you even find a printer?
Yeah. Visionary director Brad Peyton.
Sounds just like a Shane Carruth film.
Then he slapped. The ego of Amy Simites in the middle.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not good. I watched Blue Collar, which is Paul Schrader's. I think it's from 78. It's from the late 70s with Richard Pryor and Harvey Keitel. Because Dan's you need to watch this thing because it has like the best ending. And I'm like, okay. And it's super solid. So they play, it's actually them and Yaphet Kotto. So they play a trio of auto workers. They work at a Ford factory. And they're basically angry at the union. So, and they need money. So they decide they're going to rob the union office because they think there's money there. And it sounds like a comedy and it's totally not. It's all played completely straight. They rob the union office. There's no money in there. But the union guys are saying like, yeah, there were $20,000 in the safe because they're trying to get the money from the insurance company. And these guys are now, they literally walked away with a petty cash, which was like $268 so between the three of them. Except there was also a book in the safe that Richard Pryor's character saves, and he discovers that the book is basically all the payoffs for the bookies, that basically the union is giving money at like 15% interest to make more money to people in Vegas. And so they're like, wow, can we find some way to use this? And in the end, Pryor uses it to raise himself up and get himself a better job. It ends on the floor with Richard Pryor and Harvey Keitel about to go at it, and that's where it stops. And it is quite literally a really fantastic ending scene. That movie is really, really good.
I have to ask, how dirty is Richard Pryor in the film?
He's pretty dirty.
Yeah, I love me some dirty Richard Pryor.
Yeah, he's pretty. I mean, it fits with the character, and it's not as over the top as his like stand up. But he has his moments. I don't think I've ever seen Harvey Keitel as a young guy. I was okay. I can see the appeal of a young Harvey Keitel.
You've seen Taxi Driver?
Yeah, but it didn't have the same appeal. Like here, he actually plays like a good guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's rocking those suspenders and Taxi Driver.
Suspenders didn't really do it for me. They didn't really do it for me.
Nice.
And then I watched Club Zero, which is Jessica Hausner's new movie.
With Mia Wasikowska?
Yeah. So she did Little Joe a couple of years ago, which is still like
awesome.
I love that movie.
That movie slaps.
It screened so at good. VIFF and nobody fucking reacted to it.
Losing our mind after the screening.
Oh, that movie. Holy shit. I was so uncomfortable that movie. Holy crap.
Okay, so this is just as uncomfortable to watch.
Nice.
So Mia Wasikowska plays this conscious eating coach who is hired by this like really uppity private school that wants to offer this to students as this new thing, because the parents group suggests that they hire this conscious eating coach, and you know, they offer this as a class. So they have this group of students that she meets with, and she's literally like running a fucking cult where she's teaching kids about disorderly eating and eventually how to not eat at all. I'm not sure what to make of it. Like on the one hand, I think it's like this genius deconstruction of like society and expectations and like religion and like all this shit that we believe in that's like popular. And then on the other hand, it also comes across like, as myself, as somebody that, you know, can see it and think, okay, this is clearly disordered eating. Like this is clearly problematic thinking, but the movie doesn't take a stand. Like there's nothing to say that this is actually bad. So I can't imagine somebody that has like food issues watching this and kind of thinking, well, yeah, she's totally got it. Like that's how it reads. Like I can read it in the way that I process it in my mind, but I can see how it could be really problematic for somebody that suffers from like issues with food. Cause there's just no stance here. It's both. I think it's great. Like I thought it was a fantastic movie. I'm like, Did I tell anybody watch this? Maybe not. Like, not with the, like a lot of trigger warnings, like a lot of caveats.
Yeah, I have a screener for it, but I never got around to it.
It's good. It's good. I mean, I'm comfortable to say to you, you should see it. I think you'll enjoy it. But it's clearly, she has a mode of filmmaking, which I appreciate. It's just like, yeah, it's good and it's creepy as fuck.
Well, we're just talking to Little Joe fans here. So.
Yeah, pretty much. Little Joe fans, you're gonna love it. It's it's kind of, I mean, it's not nearly as weird, but that ending is kind of like very, very odd.
Did Little Joe even get a physical release?
Yes, it did.
It did it? Okay.
Yeah, it did. There is a disc.
I gotta find it. Okay, yeah. I gotta find it. I want that. Blu-ray or just DVD?
I don't know if I have. I think the one I have is just the DVD. I don't think
for it, sound, I want that to be Blu-ray. Just for sound.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that movie is so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Just the tones in it, I fucking love. It's such an insidious little film.
Oh, totally. That's why when I saw this, I'm like, oh God, see this.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that she's working with Mia Wasikowska on it. Like,
yeah. And I haven't seen Mia Wasikowska in anything in a while. And she's really good here.
She's always great.
Yeah,
she's
no,
it's great. I think Stoker and stuff.
Oh,
she's always good.
I need to rewatch that. I was thinking about that the other day. That movie is
diabolical.
Chef's kiss.
Matthew Good again. Matthew Good.
I am all about the Matthew Good.
Yeah, I know.
Any day of the week, I'm there. Give me all the Matthew Good, good or bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm there.
That's the podcast name, Matthew Good or Bad. And it's a podcast all about Matthew Good movies.
Oh, I'm sure I could talk about that. Listen, I did a Twilight podcast for like legit like 10 years. I'm sure I can find 10 years worth of material to talk about Matthew Good.
Bill, did you ever guest on that Twilight podcast ever?
No. Surprisingly.
I did discover.
I feel weird about that.
I would have talked about my love of Jasper.
I love Jackson Rathbone. Let's hear a song from Jackson Rathbone. Here we go.
Oh, I did discover the other day, totally randomly, that there was a Twilight related book I've never seen in my life that came out like 10 years ago. And I was like legitimately shocked. I'm like, what is this thing I've never read?
Oh, time
clearly
for a redux.
It's on my, clearly I'm going to read it. Apparently
time for a redux now.
It's not going to happen. It's okay. We'll always have the original. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay. What's coming soon, Bill?
Yeah, I don't even have my calendar done up. So
I'm
following along with you.
May 31st. Hopefully, finally, we will get in a violent nature. It's supposed to open. I don't know.
I was denied a screener.
Wow. I forget
who's releasing it, but they denied me a screener. I was fucking legit pissed. So.
Wow.
Especially because I'm starting to hear all the buzz about it, people seeing it, and one kill in particular. And I'm like, but what?
Yeah, can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Love me some violence. I'm not sick at all. Steve already talked about it, but Jim Henson, Idea Man, I think it's on Hulu or something.
It's Disney Plus. Yeah, yeah.
Disney same, Plus. Same, yeah, one same, of those
same,
things.
Same.
I'll check that out. And as we said last episode, Robot Dreams opens. See mm-hmm. Robot Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
See
mm-hmm.
Robot Dreams. This is going to be a really bad episode next time. There's nothing opening. June 7th, Bad Boys 4. Fuck me.
Yeah. Woo. Mike Lowry.
Okay, where is what's his face? The director. Somebody help me here.
Michael Bay?
Yeah, where is Michael Bay? Did he die?
No,
did he go to director jail?
I don't know. He just wants to go away. The last time, what was the last thing he did?
Ambulance
was actually solid. Okay. I was gonna say some shit about him, but Ambulance is actually an entertaining film.
I didn't
film.
Care for Ambulance, but
I was okay with it. But I think Jake Gyllenhaal carried most of it. And Yahya Abdul-Mateen III.
Yeah, it just seems like he was making movies and all of a sudden he's disappeared. Well, sorry.
I mean,
whenever I think about Bad Boys, I just think about him using his own car because the studio wouldn't give him the money to get a Porsche. So he's like, okay, we'll just use mine. I'm like, okay, that's ballsy.
The thing about him is for every pain and gain or anything that works, there is a Six Underground or something like that.
No, Pain and Gain is the best. I love that fucking movie.
Gain's great. Transformers 12 or whatever the hell they're at now.
Yeah, at least he handed those off.
Yeah.
I think.
And then oh my God, I could actually see the Transformers.
Wow. And this is amazing. I don't need to spin around every Transformer as they're transforming. I don't need to do that. I didn't realize I didn't need to be in this spinning gyrocopter that's flying around for a dialogue scene. Holy shit.
So there's actually a shot in the film that doesn't have a cut after 3 seconds. Okay. I'm good with that.
2,000 cuts in Madam Web. 2,732 cuts.
That'd be like, is that legit?
That's legit. Yeah, that's holy legit. The shit. Director said it herself. SJ, whatever her name is. Yeah.
Wow.
And Dakota Johnson was in the interview like, fucking what?
I still didn't hate that movie. Doesn't matter.
She emoted more to hearing about that, the amount of cuts in the movie, than I think she has in her entire fucking career.
Leave her alone. Bill, continue.
I will not murder Raina. I will not leave her alone.
She's really good.
Dakota Johnson alone.
She's really
besides
good.
Cha-Cha Real Smooth. Yeah, I will say she's not really leave.
Good Cha-Cha Real Smooth.
But she's also kind of herself in it.
Yeah. In case you haven't seen it, Run Lola Run gets a re-release.
Oh, I'm kind of down with that because that movie rocks.
Movie is so good.
He is such a wicked filmmaker in that movie.
He hasn't made anything in a while either.
No, it's been a while. I feel like Cloud Atlas was like the
was
last
it?
Thing that I
think
noticed.
I think that was the last thing that he did.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that trailer for The Watchers?
It's the new the Mina was that her Shyamalan?
Shauna Knight Shyamalan.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks fun.
Yeah.
Okay with it.
Hopefully she
is better.
A little bit, maybe a little better than her dad.
Yeah.
He's so hit or miss lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I do enjoy Knock.
Yeah, that was good. Hitman opens on Netflix. Watch that shit. It's great.
Yes.
And then on June 14th, Inside Out 2, and that is literally it.
Yeah, I have my tickets for it already, but
that doesn't shock me a bit.
I don't know. But I'm also like willing to switch it out once I get what else is coming out that day in our theaters. You know what I mean? Like even if there's something that I haven't gotten yet,
yeah,
it's in its like second or third week, I legit might switch it out. Who knows?
I have no like. None of those particularly interesting movies, so I have no vote.
I bought my ticket for The Strangers next week, which I heard is just awful. So it's just
makes
weird
me sad.
Yeah,
they screwed that series.
They did.
Rennie, son of a bitch.
We'll always have the original. That's all that matters.
Fuck's sake. Tino, what did you do, man? What did you do?
We're definitely not doing Bad Boys 4 because I'm not seeing it.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, we can do Backspot.
Oh, my God.
The Devery Jacobs gymnastics movie?
Yeah.
No.
I would watch that.
No.
That sounds great to me.
We're in trouble.
Devery Jacobs and gymnastics? Sold.
We're in trouble.
Well, I guess we can always just figure it out. I honestly have no idea. I guess Inside Out 2. Like, I don't know at this point.
Yeah, it's lean.
Yeah.
The good thing is the week after that, a certain delayed movie with motorcycles opens.
Finally.
Yes. I can't wait. Yeah, but if you want to. Maybe delay the podcast week. We could probably do that, but
we'll talk about it off air. We'll figure it out. But that might be a possibility.
Let's not panic on air.
There is no panicking happening.
We're not panicking at all. Anyway, guys,
we'll figure something out. If nothing else, I will have some feedback from the animation capital of the universe. Because I'm going to Annecy the week before.
Oh.
So I'll have watched lots of animation, and I'm sure I can report back on the next Robot Dreams.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you came back with Robot Dreams last year talking about how great it was. And definitely, that was pretty good.
We may have to do what Bill said and just do our half year.
I think so. I think so. I think that that's a fine choice too. It's actually not a bad time to do it because it is kind of the middle of the
year,
so. And it is a quiet week. So why the hell not?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. There we go.
Other than the fact that I actually have to make my top five.
Yeah. Which we've already established how horrible this is going to be.
Yeah.
I think we're going to need more than five. Fucking
looking forward to this. And it's going to be a lot of, oh, why did you put that there? And be like, I don't know. Okay.
I just thought that was
where it was supposed to go.
You know, my number one is Challengers.
Horrible about my number it.
One. My number one is Challengers. Like, that's not changing.
Okay.
Not changing.
It might be mine. I don't know. It might be mine. It might not be. It might be Furiosa. I don't know.
Depends on how I feel that morning.
We'll see what way the wind breathes and if I smell gasoline on it. I don't know. You never know.
We will witness. Fuck, yeah. That is the best. I had forgotten.
I love the little war boy spraying it on his hand. Boredom. I just love it.
Oh, so good. Oh, God. Hey, we're devolving. Okay, guys, where can we find you?
I'll go. I'm Bill Harris. I am on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and
Letterboxd.
Okay, sorry. I apologize. At SoundJam69. Yeah, have a good couple of weeks, friends.
And you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at The Marina. And Steve?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Threads at The Steeple Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. Also, search me up on YouTube, Steve Stebbing, and you'll find my weekly review series, What the Hell Should I Watch?, which is released every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and I do that with my daughter, Chloe. And I also am on the horror podcast, Tremble, the last two episodes we did were Predator and Predator 2, which were really fun to rewatch, especially Busey's madness in part 2. He's so great. And you know what? Sticking the Predator in an urban landscape is so great. Like, why didn't they go back to that? 2 is a lot more fun than people remember. But I'm totally divulging. But other than that, you will find me in an existential mess of a puddle trying to figure out my 5 movies for the next week.
And you can find links to everything we talked about today at the website at atcpod.ca. And until next time,
hack the planet.
Bye.